Hello, welcome to Demo Patch Podcast, episode 480. I like that number. It's a good number, 480. It looks good.
480?
Looks good on my show notes. Sorry if we sound bad again, or if we sound like an episode a few weeks back. But we're back on the MacBook laptop mic.
Back in the COVID bunker, but together, so we're just breaking the law.
Didn't you say the last time we were in your COVID bunker?
Yeah. I don't think I mentioned the law, though, last time.
That's Matt with me. Just the two of us in the bunker.
Make a note.
Rations running low.
But you did manage to get some McCafe coffees and teas, I assume.
Do you hear in the States, McDonald's are going to have Krispy Kremes?
I mean, that makes sense. They got donuts here. Little donuts, they call them, I think.
Well, I think that they might have. Do they have? Yeah, they have McCafe in the U.S.
There's also that other one, right? Isn't it just MC's apostrophe S or something like that?
No. Yeah, look it up. But it was supposed to be like a Starbucks specialty drink competitor, where it had, you know, not McCafe items like coffee and teas and whatnot, but had kind of like fruity beverages and stuff like that. And it had kind of like a 1950s, 60s-ish futurism kind of name and like style to it all.
Cosmix,
yeah.
Damn it.
Yeah. But no, a lot of people don't like the donuts at McCafe. I'm surprised that a multi-billion dollar company like McDonald's would produce bad donuts.
Are they bad or bad in relation?
I don't mind they're glazed. The standard glazed donut is pretty good.
I've never had their donuts.
The sprinkled like dip one, not that great. Really not that great.
I am a Tim Hortons purist.
But I feel like McCafe could compete if they had better baked goods with Tim Hortons. Because right now, Tim Hortons donuts are pretty good. I know Tim Hortons gets a bad rap nowadays, but I like their donuts. Their donuts are pretty good. No?
You don't like donuts? I don't know.
Oh, okay.
No, wow. Well, no. So here's the thing is, do you remember like back in the day when Tim Hortons used to make their own baked goods? And they used to have even a cake sort of section where they had like a rotating cylindrical cake display
thing. I don't remember that. You know what I'm
talking? Well, they used to have that. They used to have Black Forest cake and everything.
Like 20 years ago?
Oh, yeah. A long time ago.
Oh,
we were children. They had these cakes. Back then, they used to have stuff like eclairs and those type of things.
Oh.
So here's the thing. I like the donuts that are there. Mm-hmm. I feel like they're too corporate or something.
Too
like
standard.
The actual selection is wrong. But what is there is good.
Right. I'd agree with that. And I don't get too crazy with my donuts, so I don't mind the plain donut like that. But you're right. They don't have anything special. I was actually talking with a couple from, I think they were from Florida when I was on a cruise.
Okay.
And the cruise went into Canada and we got off in like Halifax or something like that. Halifax? I don't remember. Somewhere out east, right? We got off somewhere and they tried Tim Hortons. And they said they weren't that impressed. Because they, in their mind, they thought it was going to be like a specialty donut like place. Almost like a mom and pop kind of, you know, 100-year-old recipe kind of deal.
Which it kind of was when they had the cakes.
Yeah. And it was just standard donuts. Like they probably just tasted like Dunkin' Donuts or whatever to them.
They're probably made off-site, flash frozen, brought in, I would assume.
I told them that, like, Tim Hortons isn't really great. It's just convenient and cheap. They're everywhere, and they all taste the same everywhere. You know what you're getting. It's really affordable, and you're out.
The greatness of Tim Hortons may come from its comfort.
Yeah.
You're in, like, a weird town, and you're just sort of like, man, I don't want to be here, or something.
There's a Tim's.
Yeah. There's a Tim Hortons. You just go sit at Tim Hortons, and it feels like you're back home.
Yeah, and it saved us during the Pokemon Go days.
I ruined their chair, though. That was horrible. To be clear to everyone out there, we went walking. Pokemon Go just comes out. There's a heat wave. We're like, man, let's just go out walking anyway. We're unaware that you're supposed to go to, like, you know, kind of key landmark locations to min-max. So you're supposed to go to, like, you know, a park or something like that with landmarks and other people there. And we were just walking around, like, a suburb of the city.
There was nothing.
And we had our phones plugged into our sort of power packs that were in our pockets. My phone stopped charging due to the temperature and gave me a temperature warning. We were walking in like open sunlight for over 2 hours.
No shade, yeah.
No shade, over 2 hours, no sunscreen, no hats. We go into a Tim Hortons, saved our lives, had that
lemonade.
Lemonade, that's right. Lemonade. I get up off the leather chair and that leather chair has an imprint. A wet, sweat-filled imprint of me on that chair. I ruined that chair. And we had to get the hell out of there. And then our dumbass, we had to walk still, yeah, like 20 minutes to get to the car.
Yeah, it was just a checkpoint. All right, Matt, let's get into some video game fun facts.
Yeah.
You got a new one for us this week?
I got a small bonus one in front of the big one.
Oh, holy cow.
Okay. Yeah. So, this one I just found out randomly. This is, so all this stuff's about the fat man in Fallout. And specifically in Fallout 3, the ding you hear is actually the cafeteria lunch bell of Bethesda Softworks cafeteria at the time.
That's amazing.
It may still be. I'm not sure whether they moved at all. But the Fat Man, if you don't know, is a handheld nuclear launch weapon. So instead of you thinking of like a huge missile in a silo and, you know, fires off and there's a whole launch code system, well, a la what we see in Fallout 76, right? Obviously, yeah, it's an arcadey version of the real thing, but it's the idea, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone thinks nuclear missile silo. There was a real handheld nuclear missile launcher. Was, I guess it's not missiles, but nuclear weapon launcher. So the Fat Man is actually modeled after the real M388 Davy Crockett. And yes, that Davy Crockett from the, was it Urban Legends or whatever? No, folk. It's like a folk hero or a folk legend.
Mm-hmm.
M388 Davy Crockett tactical nuclear recoilless rifle. It was designed in the 1950s. The Army fielded this tactical nuclear weapon during the Cold War, and there were two models, the M28, which was the light model, and the M29, which was the heavy model. Both of them fired the M388 nuclear projectile, armed with the W54 nuclear warhead. The light model was deployed so that it could be set up on jeeps and other vehicles, and the heavy model was designed for longer range engagements. Both of them used the same projectile, even though they're different, you know, calibers and such, because of ease of deployment and consistency. You can basically just bring, you know, one ammo pack for both of them, and you have ammo for both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Some quick facts on the M388 is the blasty. This is ridiculous for a handheld, like, yeah, this is wild. This is straight out of, I mean, Fallout, but straight out of sci-fi.
Yeah.
Quick facts. Blast yield, 20 tons of TNT, which is 84 GJ, which I think is, I don't know what the metric of that is, but I put it in here.
Gigajoules?
Gigajoules, maybe. That sounds right. I think joules is probably right. the crew usually would be about 5 people.
For one handheld missile.
Well, okay, so they have a picture. They had a picture in my research. They had a picture of about, I think it was 3 people on the Jeep.
Yeah.
So I guess, you know, your crew would be probably 3 to 5 people to, like, fire this thing. Because it's just like a big tube.
Mm-hmm.
And the light model specifically is just, like, on the back of a Jeep. Sort of, like, folds out or whatever. Deploys, you launch it. It's, like, whatever, right? The effective firing range of the M28, which is the light model, was 1.25 miles or 2.01 kilometers. And the M29, and this is important, I'm going to mention this range in a minute. The M29 was 2.5 miles or 4 kilometers, so slightly further. Well, I guess double, but still. There's some mass statistics, we're not going to touch that. The reason why I have these statistics in here is because the chief historian, Matthew Seelinger, for the Army Historical Foundation said, quote, "While the Army never officially stated that the Davy Crockett would likely render the crew of a fatal dose of radiation, it was known that there was a significant chance that would occur unless the crew was well shielded." So basically, this thing is just like, you fire it and it's like, well, but the thing is, it's important to note that it was kind of realized among, you know, historians, but military experts as well at the time, that if a combat on the ground in an isolated, you know, battlefield escalated to this point,
mm-hmm,
chances are we're going to enter in full, the world's going to blow up nuclear war, and we're going to have a Fallout, if you will.
Yeah.
Like a Fallout world. Just not the fun type. Now, while the warhead created a small nuclear explosion, the direct radiation released from the detonation had a higher kill radius than the blast itself. If the warhead exploded at an altitude of between 75 and 85 meters, anyone within a 400-meter radius of the blast would likely receive a fatal dose of radiation.
So the blast wouldn't kill them, necessarily.
No, the blast was smaller.
Unless they misfired.
Yes.
That'd be a bad day.
Yes.
Like, you hit, like, a building instead of, like, over the building into the next suburb or something.
Yes. And this thing is less calculated than a missile.
Yeah.
You know, it's not coming down from a satellite or a silo.
That's a good question, too. Are they just firing it based on a trajectory? Like a artillery? Or are they firing it just blindly?
Like, so, the picture I saw was the Jeep, like I mentioned.
Yeah.
But it just is, like, literally, like, like a large, I don't know, Campbell's soup can, if you will. Like, oh no, you know what it looked like? You know, like in a video game you play, if you pick up like, in a World War II video game, if you pick up like the Panzerschreck,
yeah,
where it's like a tube, and then there's like the big sort of round thing at the end,
yeah,
sort of kind of like that, but obviously bigger in scale.
Mm-hmm.
That's what this thing looked like. And so, I mean, you were probably doing some measurements to fire this thing, but yeah, like, this isn't a computer guided, you know, whatever. This is, you know, very much in the 50s and 60s. This is a Cold War weapon. So, I just, yeah.
I like the mentality, though, where they're like, you know, we need handheld nuclear weapons. We're going to be fighting the Soviets with handheld nuclear weapons.
So the idea behind that was that if normal troops weren't enough, if it was like you were defending a valley or whatever, and you're like, uh-oh, they have 100 guys, we got four, we're in trouble. This is like a
last resort kind of thing.
You know, then you fire this thing. But again, it was well known that if you did this, that it would be like, hang on, they just used a nuke.
It would spark a nuclear war.
And then, like, the Soviets or whomever would then fire nukes, like real ones, like real big ones, intercontinental ballistic missiles, and it would be all over, or a lot over.
Well, this kind of came up in Ukraine, too, because they, when Russia invaded Ukraine just recently, there was talk about using tactical nukes.
Right.
As if that's somehow better. You know, smaller nukes, but it's still a nuke. You know. And it's like, is that okay? Can we get away with doing that?
Here's the thing, though, is like, we're comparing this, the power of the explosion is compared to
TNT.
TNT. Mm-hmm. Why not just use a bunch of TNT?
Because it's harder to get that TNT where you need it.
But I would assume we have something better than TNT that is not nuclear.
Yeah, there's that, during the Trump administration, they dropped some big non-nuclear bomb, like the biggest non-nuclear bomb.
Use that!
They did use it once in under the Trump administration.
On who?
And
wait, and who did it? Like, America did it?
America did it, yeah.
On who? Or just in testing?
I can't remember on who, but I guess the idea was that, you know, you have a bunch of people, a bunch of enemies in caves and whatnot, and you launch it and it blows up everything.
Right.
But it was non-nuclear, and it was a massive, massive explosion, apparently. Then the Russians said they had a bigger one, but who knows if that's true. So anyway, that was great, Matt. Good stuff.
Thank you.
I even like the little mini one in front of that, too.
Thank you.
That was good. All right, let's hop into the video game news for the week. Not too much going on. Nothing really caught my eye. So my list was pretty short. So we have a query corner we're going to get into later on. But the only kind of interesting ones I kind of found. Apple opens up the App Store to retro game emulators. This is from The Verge. So Apple's loosening its App Store restrictions and opening the marketplace up to retro game emulators. In an update on Friday, Apple announced that game emulators can come to the App Store globally and offer downloadable games. Apple says those games must comply with all applicable laws, though, an indication it will ban apps that provide pirated titles. The move should allow the retro console emulators already on Android, at least those that are left, to bring their apps to iPhone. Game emulators have long been banned from iOS, leaving iPhone owners in search of workarounds via jailbreaking or other workarounds. They're also one of the key reasons so far that iPhone owners in the European Union might check out third-party app stores now that they're allowed to in the region. Apple's change today could head that off. Alongside the new rule on emulators, Apple also updated its rules around super apps, such as WeChat. It now says that mini games and mini apps within these apps must use HTML5, clarifying that they can't be native apps and games. But anyway,
that's still bizarre, though. Isn't that particularly bizarre? We're going to allow emulators, but if you have a mini game in your chat app, we're going to force you to use HTML5 and they can't be a native game. Which would indicate that if Game Pass were to have games within it, they wouldn't allow it. If Game Pass was a launcher in which you pressed a button to play...
To download games.
And it literally... Yeah, you literally played the game inside of it. That's the problem.
I don't think Apple wants that to be the case.
Correct. But they're going...
But they loosened up the streaming restrictions, but Microsoft still said it wasn't good enough.
But so now they're going after the mini games in people's chats.
I suppose so, yeah. Because Apple does have apps and games in iMessage.
So let me ask you this. We don't know this. Did someone make an emulator in one of these things as a workaround? Like you mentioned?
Oh, maybe, yeah.
And then Apple was like, no. Okay, fine. We'll open up emulators But you're not having full games, as many games.
I don't know how big the emulator audience is.
It's pretty big.
Is it?
It's pretty big.
Because, like, this is saying that once... Because the European Union cracked open the App Store and said that Apple must now allow third-party app stores.
Right.
So that would allow them to download a emulator from, like, the Epic Game Store on iOS. Right? And Apple would lose out on potential revenue generated via those apps.
Sure.
So they're opening up the door saying, bring those apps to the App Store first. Right?
Right.
So that they can then compete with Epic or other app stores.
Right.
But is it big enough for Apple to care about that? Maybe it is, because they just made that change.
Do a lot of these emulators have ads? And does Apple want the piece?
I don't know what Apple gets in terms of the ads within apps.
They probably get something, I would imagine.
I honestly don't know the answer to that, though.
Probably 30% or something.
That's a good question.
Or it's 50-50 or something. Like the number's out there. We're not developers, so we didn't, like, look into it and, like, you know, we don't work in it.
Let me see if I can Google this here real quick. Does Apple make money from the ads in apps? Oh, well, now it's just talking about ads in the App Store.
What?
Apple makes it easy to earn revenue by running ads in your Apple News content. No, that's not what I want either. No, see, this is hard to find out.
But anyway, like, we assume that they take a piece.
We assume
they take a piece. Like, you can ask Copilot, maybe, and it'll tell you. Something like that, because it might be able to discern to go through and sift through. But, like, I mean, that wouldn't be the biggest revenue draw.
Right.
Because why would they ban it originally? Why would they ban it originally?
Because it was a way for you to run games without going through the App Store. Apple wants the games to either be downloaded through the App Store and be reviewed by them first. This was the whole problem with Game Pass in the first place. They said to Microsoft, you can stream these games, but they all have to go through the same process as every other app through the App Store. Right? So every game has to be submitted to Apple for them to approve or disapprove. You know?
This feels childish or something.
You know, well, it is the one case that the DOJ might have some standing on is their monopoly over their App Store.
But it's not even their App Store, it's their device too.
Yeah.
Like, it just feels...
Well, that's where things get kind of hazy. Like, yeah, it's Apple's OS, it's Apple's iPhone, and it's Apple's App Store. Why can you just come in and tell them what to do with that stuff when it's all theirs? But the problem is they're treating now phones as if they're just regular commodity devices, right?
Yeah, but why can't Canon show up and tell you, you can't take a picture of this? I don't want you to use my DSLR to take pictures of mountains. I want it to all be rivers. Only take pictures of rivers. There must be a river in the foreground. And if you don't, like, I'll have a case against you, or I'll ban it, or, like, somehow DRM it in some way. It's one thing, you know what it's like? It's like, you know when, like, an old game on Windows, like, Windows updates over the years, yada yada, goes from Windows 8.8.1 to 10 to 11, okay? Some old games and old pieces of software get left behind, but people figure out ways, you know, oh, they'll add a DLL, they'll have, like, something they do in the registry or whatever. Like, there's a workaround a lot of the time to ensure these old things work.
Mm-hmm.
But Microsoft doesn't provide that, and I don't really see anyone saying Microsoft's to blame for X thing no longer being supported. Like, it's people are aware that as times move on, you can't support absolutely every little tiny thing, especially when, like, that piece of software may be abandonware in the beginning,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, the actual developer that made it is gone or is not working on that anymore and won't be patching it. So it's like, people are aware, but, like, it'd be like if people are aware that this happens, like, the ravages of time occur even in software in the digital world. But for some reason, like, or for a good reason, I guess, Microsoft doesn't step on the toes of the people that fix it. They figure out the DLLs, they figure out the workarounds and do this stuff. They just go like, oh, okay. And short of it being an illegal way to do it,
mm-hmm.
they just don't really care. It's sort of like, oh, they got it working. Cool. This one file was supposed to have a 1 in it. It had a 0. They changed it. It works. Hooray. And then that's it. Like, there's no, if there's even an acknowledgement, there's no shutdown. But Apple shows up and goes, hang on, I didn't want you to change that from 0 to 1.
I think because, well, Microsoft makes their money off of selling you Windows in the first place, or selling it to that computer, you know, selling the OEM or whatever to Acer, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they've already made their money.
Sure.
So they don't really care what you do with Windows after the fact. They've made their money.
Sure.
Apple uses their device to continuously make money.
Sure.
Through services and the App Store and whatnot.
Yeah, but
so like, they're trying to protect that.
But it's another step though.
Yeah.
Like Microsoft's in the game of Xbox Game Pass.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not going against Ubisoft's subscription.
No.
They're not going against EA Play. In fact, No. They're partnered with them in some way.
They're being a nice guy in Microsoft right now.
But they never, as far as I know, have done this in the Windows scene.
Did Windows not have a antitrust lawsuit against them a long time ago?
I was going to say there's probably like a case that someone could bring
up. I think there was, though. I
this just seems like the stuff from Apple right now seems really blatant.
Yeah, that might be the thing, but that's how Apple's kind of always been, though. And it's like, just now are they deciding to do that because they have this perception of being popular?
Well, because I have a question. So, like, let's say, for example, you get a MacBook.
Mm-hmm.
Would it be acceptable for them to say, during the setup, you know, set up your username, your password, your Apple ID, whatever you set up. You set up all your stuff. And then you have to choose a role that computer is filling. This computer is for a developer.
Mm-hmm.
And then if at any point that developer gets given a task like, hey, edit this video, the computer goes, whoa, 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 this is a developer computer. You have to either A, buy another license, or B, get another MacBook.
Yeah.
Like, is that okay? Why are you buying the MacBook?
In principle, it is okay. You're going back to your Canon thing, where like you buy a Canon camera, you can only take pictures of rivers, right? And not mountains or whatever, let's say.
Yeah.
Yes, they technically have a right to do that, do they not?
I don't think so.
Why not?
I don't know. Okay, I don't know.
It's their product. They can design it how they want it to be designed.
But in the same breath.
But the difference is they have competitors.
Right.
Who won't do that.
Right.
And it will then force them to open it up and allow you to take pictures of whatever you want. Right? Because let's say they did this. Mm-hmm. People stopped buying Canon cameras. And all started buying Nikons or Sonys or whatever,
mm-hmm.
then Canon would lose money and then would have to then, you know, come out with a better camera. That's the way competition is supposed to work.
But right? it is your property, though. Canon can't show up and say, you can't smash this.
No.
Although, okay, we're not lawyers, to be fair. So, like, maybe this is all wrong. Like, there are those weird car deals where, like, someone will buy a super limited car and then the person's either not ever allowed to sell it. Or they're not allowed to sell. But I think with that, they might be signing a contract as a part of the purchase.
Yeah, I mean, it could be part of the user agreement when you buy a Canon camera. And they could use AI to, like, see what you're taking a picture of.
And then just, like, black it out type thing and, like, cover it up almost like a lens cover.
Yeah. Or screw it up in some way, put a big old watermark on it or whatever, you know. They could totally do that. I think they have a right to do it. It's just when does it get to the point where they're being abusive with it? Right? And that's where Apple's kind of like on that line. Is like, are they being abusive with their App Store?
Well, how where's the line of ownership? Like, you're saying Apple made this and they sold it to me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, did they sell it to me or did they lease it? So do
the software has been
licensed. Do I need to have renter's rights?
Well, the software has been licensed to you.
Okay, so do I need to have licensee rights?
Maybe.
Like renter's rights. Obviously, it's not a dwelling, but yeah. You know what I mean?
But this is another problem with the whole tech industry as a whole. There's been, like, literally zero regulation passed.
It's new, right?
Well, now it's not. It's, like, 30 years old now.
But that's new in terms of government realizing something exists.
For no bills to be passed on protection, on consumer protection against these things? There's no online privacy bills or anything like that? It's, like, it's a bit crazy.
Well, the online stuff's starting to come in. Like, the whole net neutrality argument and blah, blah, blah. Like, oh, that's right to repair. Those things are coming in. Those things are coming in hot and have been around, what, for 5 to 10-ish years?
Yeah. So it's just like, I think now, yeah, they're finally trying to take a look at tech. But it's kind of overdue.
I would say it's overdue, yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
But this is that, like, a little bit of tinfoil hat, but this is that thing where it's like, rent everything and be happy. Is this a thing where it's like, then don't... Like, I feel really weird saying this, but it's like, I go to a store, camera store, buy a Canon camera. I bought it.
Mm-hmm.
Or did I?
You bought the physical hardware you take home,
and
you sign a license by using it for the software. And the App Store and the iOS is software, so Apple still owns that. They have a right to do with it what they want.
But this is where I think they get themselves in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
I can't, in many cases, without breaking the license agreement of many things,
mm-hmm.
go in and suddenly like wipe out their software and put my software on there.
Right.
As far as I understand it, is that not a problem? It's like, here's some useless atoms that are in the shape of yeah. like how they, yeah. you know what I mean? All that matters is this license and we control it.
Well, I don't know why this happened with software. I mean, I guess if you're trying to think about how do we control software? Like when you're selling Windows copies, what stops you from just like copying it and pasting it and giving it to your friend, right? Licenses.
Yeah.
So it was like a way to stop, I guess, piracy of software,
mm-hmm.
right? But we lost ownership in doing that.
Right.
Does there need to be some sort of regulation or law that gives us that back? That says if you sell a movie on Apple TV, that person owns that
movie,
physical software piece of movie, right?
This is kind of what GOG is.
Yeah.
DRM free.
Yeah. But would that solve a lot of these issues?
Well, you know what it is. If you think about it, it's like if I buy an iPhone or I buy anything, if I buy like a physical device, a remote control, and I kill somebody with it,
yeah,
it's not, you know, Logitech's problem if they're the maker of the remote
right.
and I kill somebody with it. I'm the one that kills somebody with a remote. I'm, you know, in legal trouble now,
mm-hmm.
right, under the laws. So it's like there's like that with the DRM free. It's like that little. Safety thing or whatever, where it's like, here's your games, copy and paste them, you know, where you will. You're not supposed to do this, 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 and this.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do so and you're caught, see, it's just like if I was caught in the murder case,
yeah.
you know, if I'm caught distributing this, I'm going to mm-hmm. get in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's what they're getting at. But I mean, admittedly, like it's super difficult to track somebody's copying and pasting.
You wouldn't be able to.
Like, I mean, there would be ways to do it.
Unless everything becomes an NFT.
Or if somebody tracks stuff. Like, if there's tracker... Like, you know those pirated movies? Like, there's people put trackers in those, and, like, it's like a trap.
Oh, you can still issue licenses, but you should be the owner of that license. Like if I buy Windows, Microsoft should give me that license key, right? And that will be my physical thing, that string of code, right?
Right.
And so if I give a copy of my Windows to you, you can't use it, but you'll still own it if you buy a copy from Microsoft, right?
Right.
Does that make sense?
It's almost like it should be a proof of purchase is what I'm getting
right.
from what you're
yeah.
saying.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just solely proof of purchase.
Yeah. And then it's my responsibility to keep track of that thing.
Or to resell it. See, this is another thing
or to resell
that you can't kind of do.
Or to resell it, yeah. Yeah.
NFTs, baby. We're back.
Anyway, I'd be interested in checking out some emulators. I don't know what kind of games are on there, because, like, all the good games, aren't they, like, locked behind, like, Nintendo and stuff? And you know what I mean?
Well, here's the thing.
Apple doesn't want illegal emulated games.
Right, but you would have...
They want legal emulated games.
Wouldn't you have to have illegal games that you would just source yourself?
Well, no, there might be some companies that do it legit who might license the games for the emulators, right?
I've never heard of one. Maybe it exists.
So maybe Apple's opening this up and trying to look like good guys when they know they won't allow any illegal apps onto their app store.
Well, they're saying, if you notice, there's the way you worded it anyway from there is provided. Meaning, like, if you go into the store right now, or you like Amazon, doesn't matter, and you look up a retro emulator, there's a lot of handhelds that say, we'll load up a stick, like an SD card, full of games. A lot of those games are illegal.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
they have just ROMs that they've copied, and they've copied them onto, you know, hundreds of sticks.
Yeah.
Sold them to different customers. That's the illegal part. It's included with the hardware. What Apple's saying is they don't want those games included with the download of the emulator. But you could probably go in there and say, I want to read my ROMs from this file. And then it's like, where'd you get those ROMs? That's none of Apple's business.
Yeah.
Pretty greasy.
All right, let's move on to our next story here. Sony Interactive CEO, or sorry, not Sony Interactive, Saber Interactive CEO says KOTOR, Knights of the Old Republic, remake is alive and well. This is from IGN. Announced in 2021, the long-awaited remake has changed hands multiple times, seemingly stopped development and restarted again, and after 6 years of development has not yet to manifest. Fortunately, we finally have a real concrete update on what's going on. Saber Interactive is still working on it, and according to the CEO, it's alive and well. Speaking to IGN in an interview today, Saber Interactive CEO Matthew Karch confirmed confirmed that the company took KOTOR with it during its split from Embracer Group, and that the game is still in active development. Quote, "It's clear and it's obvious that we're working on this. It's been in the press numerous times. What I will say is that the game is alive and well, and we're dedicated to making sure we exceed consumer expectations." End quote. This always worries me when a game's in development hell for 6 years. There's also been reports that it's like nowhere near close to finishing, even after 6 years of development.
How does this happen in a remake?
Because like a remake seems like a sure thing. KOTOR is one of the most popular, not only Star Wars games, but RPGs of all time, right? And so it's like, how do you screw up something that easy, where it's just like remake a popular game that everyone loves?
I suppose it depends on the level of remake they want to make, but also, like, to be fair, though, lot of the creative is done, though. You can't, like, there's no question here that goes, should we make this an online shooter? You know, there's no one can come in and do that and be like, no, that's not a remake then. You know, like that would just get shut down immediately.
Yeah, and this is a game I love, too, and so I really want it to survive, and I want to have hope. But yeah, when I hear 6 years and still haven't seen anything, it's scary. The game, the original game, you've never played it, right?
Yep.
Oh, you have played it?
I never beat it, okay. But I have played it.
It's super simple in terms of like an old RPG. Like the gameplay pauses when you're under attack, you select your moves, and then you hit play.
It's turn-based, yeah.
Yeah. And so it's like, are they going to do that? Or is it going to be more of like a modern RPG or more Baldur's Gate-esque? Dragon Age-esque.
See, that could be where they're getting bogged down.
Right, if they're trying to make this bigger game than it was originally, then it's like, okay, now it's seeming a little fishy.
That could be a big bog down, too.
Yeah.
Because imagine if you went down one like, trail where you went the Baldur's Gate route, and that's like a web
mm-hmm.
of different decisions and outcome. You do that for, like, a while, like 2 years or a year, and then it's like, hey, guys, this is taking too long. Let's backtrack. It's like, uh-oh. So now you're going to have resistance to backtrack.
Right.
What are you backtracking to, you know?
That's a really good question. Like, when you're remaking an RPG, do you have all the same side quests? Do you have all the same main quest beats? Main quest, like, dialogue options? Like, how do you go about choosing what kind of remake you're even making in the first place? That's got to be weird. Like, the MGS remake, like, they're literally using the old voice lines, and they have, like, the same kind of path they're following.
That's what Destroy All Humans did, I think.
Yeah, so it's a little more straightforward, but with an RPG, you have all these branching things. Do you need to include all the same old side quests and stuff? Are they revoicing the entire game with new actors? You know? That's crazy.
Well, it kind of reminds me of those mods that try to, like, remake Fallout 3 and Fallout 4's engine and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they... what's the one... I can't remember the one that's, like, almost done. Or quote-unquote almost done. Oh, Sky Oblivion, I think.
Mm.
Where they've added... Like, they have a... I don't know if it's all, but they have a lot of the original side quests, the original... I don't think they can, I'm not sure if they can use the original dialogue or how that works. I think they can re-record it. Something like that. But anyway, it's, like, a lot of the original stuff, as original as it legally can be, is available in there. However, there, as far as I know, are new quests, new side quests, new things like that to, like, keep you engaged.
Right.
Because otherwise, it's just, like, unless you've changed the gameplay, I guess, it's like another, it's just a coat of paint over what you already had.
Well, we're kind of going to talk about that a bit in our Query Corner question, too.
Yeah.
But Demon's Souls, like, they use, like, the same map of the game, essentially. The same wireframe of the game, almost. And just put a new spray of paint on there.
Yeah.
So that's a very kind of straightforward remake. I don't know. I don't know which way you want to go.
Well, here's a question. So, like, with KOTOR's old. It has, like, a patina of age now.
Yeah.
It's obviously captured nostalgia
mm-hmm.
and is worthy of a new project, which is this.
Yeah.
Not a third game, but a remake. Okay. What do you want? Like, you like it.
Mm-hmm.
What do you want out of something like that?
I want it to... God.
Because if you change it too much...
You lose...
You know, well, you're making a new game. Do you want a new game, or do you want to experience this one again? Or experience the original one again, sorry.
I just wanted to have a fresh coat of paint, I think. I don't want, like, an HD version.
Right.
You can play it on PC in HD. Right. I kind of want the Demon Souls kind of thing. But, God, more than that, though, I think. I want it revoiced, because the dialogue back then wasn't... Carthor Nassi is just not given a great performance.
But revoiced or rewritten?
Well, if you're going to revoice it, might as well rewrite it, right?
I don't know.
Because the audio files are still going to be good, right? It's not like recording dialogue has gotten that much better in the last 15 years.
I don't know if they re-recorded. I don't think they did. I don't know if they did, though. In the original, or the remake, or whatever, remaster of Destroy All Humans, mm-hmm. I think the audio sounds bad.
Okay.
And yeah. I'm not an audiophile, though, mm-hmm. and I don't know if they re-recorded it or not, but I don't think it sounds that good.
I don't know if that game has, like, it probably didn't have the biggest of budgets or draw for talent.
But they did the second one.
Yeah. I don't know. So I think I want a full-on remake.
But
I'm fine with them not hitting all the exact same storylines and stuff. I'm fine with them. Here's the other question, too. It was part of the old canon for Star Wars.
Yeah.
Which is now called Legends. Is this new version going to try to fit in with the new canon?
Mm.
Or is it going to stay with the old Legends canon? You know?
Well, what I was going to ask you is, if you remake it too much, and that's a good point with the new lore,
mm-hmm.
why don't you just make another game?
Yeah. Make a new RPG.
Like, at this point.
A new Star Wars RPG, yeah.
And just say, inspired by KOTOR.
Yeah. Yeah. Damn. I just want a Star Wars RPG. That's all I want.
Like, we were talking about Oblivion earlier, and mm-hmm. we were talking about, like, the charm.
Yeah.
Like, if you had really good voice actors, of which there were many in Oblivion, mm-hmm. like Patrick Stewart's in there and stuff, but there were many voice lines that were obviously goofy.
Yeah.
Charming, but goofy, yeah. right? Like, especially the death noises, like, hum, and so, like, just, like, you know, shit like that.
Yeah.
If you remove that, and I don't mean rewrite it, if you just re-record it.
It's not going to be the same.
It's not the same. It's like, oh, that sounded good. And that's not what it was before.
Or it sounds like you're trying to capture the original intent, right?
It's almost a parody of it.
Well, this is... I watch a bunch of Red Letter Media. They have that series called Best of the Worst, where they watch bad movies.
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah.
And there's a difference between people who go out trying to make a bad movie and people who go out trying to make a good movie that turns out bad.
Like a failed project.
And basically. Those are the funny ones. When you try to make a bad movie, that's not funny. That's just kind of lame. And so what I was trying to say to you about Oblivion prior was they were setting out to make a great game. And they made a goofy one, which was still beloved and fun and enjoyable, right? But that's what gives it its charm, is that they tried and they missed the target.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what becomes funny, you know? And that's why it's enjoyable. So that's kind of a weird line you need to walk. Don't set out to make a funny game. So if they did make remake Oblivion and try to make it charming, they're going to miss. They're just going to miss it, you know?
Unless it's... they just use the old lines.
Unless they do that, yeah. Yeah.
And then...
Mm-hmm.
Then it's still Oblivion.
Yeah. Actually, that's a good question. You're a big Oblivion fan. What would you want a remake to be? In the same vein of KOTOR.
Well, I was actually going to ask you a question on KOTOR, and it applies to both, though. These RPGs are modular in that the quests are just a part of the world.
Yeah.
You could almost say they're like Lego blocks. If the core is the same, like, I think I would want the core to be the same. The lines to be the same. The voice actor to be the same. I want all that to be the same, mm-hmm. I think. Fresh coat of paint, like new graphics. If you want to, like, enhance the combat system, sure. Like, I'm fine with that.
Well, it would be like a modern, like, Skyrim's old at this point, but, you know, closer to the combat system of, like, Skyrim or something, right?
They'll probably just make it Skyrim anyway, because do they have a new one? That's not like a jerk.
Or I guess Starfield will make it more combat similar to that.
But it's not guns, though.
No, but there's melee weapons in Starfield, aren't there?
Yeah, there are.
Yeah.
So the question at that point, though, is like, okay, so you make a modern Bethesda game, same voice actors, like, same, you know, same voice lines, all that shite. Everything's, like, the same music. Is it okay to add quests? Like, in your KOTOR game, there's clearly side content.
Mm-hmm.
Would you be okay with them keeping everything the same, but then, because it's additional, like, they're optional, like, adding quests, is that what you want, or does that feel too tacked on, where you're just like, oh, this is a value add?
Depends on the quality of the quest they put in, right?
Like, if it's just like, go protect my dog or something.
Yeah.
Like, that's pretty cheap.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't mind it, though.
I don't know.
Like, I think they just need... here's what they probably would do. They're going to sit down, and they're going to follow the same main quests.
Yeah.
Not necessarily every beat, but they're going to follow it.
Yeah.
Use it as a guide. But then the side quests, I think, they'll take the ones that people like, that the fans like, and redo those ones, and then maybe throw in some new ones. Right? So pick out like your handful of your favorite side quests from fans. Toss those ones in. And then make new additional ones.
Was there an expansion to KOTOR?
No, I don't think so, no. I don't think that was really happening much back then.
Probably expansion packs on PC. But those are for primarily PC games, right?
Yeah, and like MMOs and stuff.
So here's the question. Wouldn't it just make a lot of sense? Like, if Oblivion comes out, and Oblivion comes out, and it like, Oblivion originally had a bunch of random DLC, like the horse armor, infamously.
Yeah.
The, like, I think it's called, like, Dragonfire Castle. I don't know if that's actually what it's called, but it's a castle you own. Bunch of stuff. Vile Lair, everything. Whole shebang. I'm saying put everything like that in there. Shivering Isles, of course, those are the big ones, and Night of the Nine, that's the second big one. There's two big ones. And you make all that, and you do all the same lines and everything. I don't mind the odd side quest, maybe, but I think you don't do that. I think you go the Titan quest route, which is you make a new expansion, and that is where you make your new content. You leave the old alone versus modernization. In a way. Now, I haven't played Titan Quest, the new one. No, I think it's still the old game. As far as I know, I played it a long time ago. So I just can't remember.
Yeah.
Like how it's so old that I played the new version like a long time ago. But as far as I know, it's the same game and they made a new expansion. And now they're making it Titan Quest 2.
Yeah.
What I'm thinking is, though, is like they made Shivering Isles, which is a new map. Knights of the Nine was on the existing map. Mehrunes Razor, which is another larger kind of bit of content, was in a new dungeon, but on the same map.
Mm-hmm.
Make another map. Have another piece. That's all new. You can have your shiny new voice actors. You can have all that. And if I don't want that to touch my Oblivion, I literally just go like, I ain't going through that portal, and that's the end of it.
Right.
Like,
yeah. All right. Well, since we're just talking about remakes, why don't we just jump into the Curry Corner here?
Sure.
So we have, like, are there too many remakes nowadays? Obviously, we're seeing a ton of them. And we're going to have to make some definitions here, too. Right? Because there's no set standard for what remake or remaster is. We've argued about this on the podcast before.
Time and time again.
I know me and Adriano differed on Demon's Souls being a remake or a remaster. So we're going to need some definitions. Because even games like The Last of Us, I think they call it remake, right?
I think they do, but I don't agree with that. If they call it that, I don't agree with that.
And is the second one called remake?
I don't know, but I also don't agree with that, if that's the case.
Because that one makes less sense. I think you could make a stronger case. Oh, damn, I did rename, not remake.
What I was going to say is, maybe for the sake of our argument here, or discussion here, is that we could say...
They call it remaster.
Okay, so that's right, I think.
Yeah.
So what I was going to say is remake... is like the Final Fantasy remake.
Ground up. Yeah.
And if you played the first one, you're going to be freshly, like just right now, if you played the first original one, you're going to be freshly entertained with like a big old difference. Like it's a big old different game. You know, it's a not the same game.
Yeah.
As it was on the PlayStation 1.
Yeah.
So that I would say for the sake of our discussion, that's remake.
Okay. So yeah. So
that's remake.
Final Fantasy VII remake.
Yep.
Resident Evil 2, 3, yep. 4 remake.
Those are remakes.
Yeah, okay.
Remaster is like fresh coat of paint, maybe even if you re-recorded the lines, but it's the same story or something.
And easier to visualize when they were doing the HD remakes. Because yes. It was just like higher res of the same texture, but just a higher res texture.
Or you like take tank controls and make a modern control scheme.
Yeah, they didn't actually change what you're looking at, just how you're controlling it.
The way I kind of envision it is, if I just played the original version of it, I would be bored playing it again.
Mm-hmm.
The remake, no, I would not be bored. It's a totally like, whoa, you know, this would be like, oh, I'm playing the same thing again, but it's a little easier to control.
Yeah.
Or it sounds a little better.
Yeah.
Or it looks nicer, whatever. And then, was there a third? Oh, remake, remaster, and then re-release or something we had, right? Oh, accessibility. making it technically accessible.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you literally take the game and you go like, it was on PS2 and now it's on PS4 and it's just the same damn thing.
Which is kind of what, well...
Resistance Retribution, the PSP game that's now on PS5/PS4, that is what I would
say. A re-release.
That is a re-release for accessibility, modern accessibility.
Yeah. But not that accessibility.
Not like...
Not people accessibility.
No, no. But modern accessibility.
Your ability to access it.
That's why I wanted to discuss. Yeah. Modern accessibility, meaning modern consoles, modern installs, modern downloads, that thing.
Now, here's where things get tricky, is with Demon's Souls. And this is what kind of, you know, made me and Adriano kind of debate over. Because that game is using the exact same levels, you know. And the timings are exactly the same. The animations are the same. But they rebuilt everything else from the ground up.
Remaster.
You think that's a remaster?
In what we've just set up, that I'd say that's remaster.
The reason I don't think it's a remaster is because it visually looks different. To me...
Only because of the technological limitations at the time.
Sure, but when we translate this to film, okay, a remaster would be taking an old film negative,
mm-hmm.
blowing it up to 4K,
mm-hmm.
maybe touching it up a bit.
Yeah.
And then re-releasing it.
Yeah.
That is a remaster, because you took the information that was already there.
And you, like, touched it up.
And you simply enhanced the previous information.
Right. Did the same thing. They took the GDD, the game design document, and remade it.
But here, it's like they didn't...
Or reproduced it, I guess.
It's like they had a film.
Yeah.
And they looked at all the different shots.
Yeah.
And went out and refilmed it.
Yes.
The exact same locations.
Yeah.
The exact same lookalike actors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the exact same, like, they re-recorded those actors saying the exact same dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
That's a remake.
So, for the thing that we just set up, for the parameters we set up, I think that's a remaster. For the parameters you set up right now, I'm not saying you don't have a case.
Yeah. I think putting too much emphasis on the skeleton is the problem.
But here's the thing, is all the creative is done. Like, here's the thing. If you had a game design document details all the Dark Souls or, what was it, Demon's Souls?
Demon's
Souls. All of Demon's Souls was about. And you hand it to a team in 2007, you hand it to a team in 2020, and you hand it to a team, or let's just say 2000. Hand it to a team in 2000, flat. Mm-hmm. Hand it to a team in 2010, you hand the exact same document to a team in 2024. What are they producing?
Different games.
But it's the same, isn't it? So what I'm saying is that, and for the sake of this example, the sake of this argument, is a remaster.
Okay.
That's what I'm calling it.
I still disagree, but we'll move on to the actual crux of the Query Corner question. So, what are you upset with, or are you upset that there's too many remasters, or remakes, or re-releases? I think we can say re-releases is fine. To bringing old games to new platforms, modern platforms, is fine.
But is it a sub for a remaster or a remake? So, like, okay, so this is the thing. It's like, it's kind of like the age, I don't know if it's age old adage, but it's the thing that we hear all the time now, even in movies. We're out of ideas. We're going back to the old. Oh, they played it safe. They did a remake or a remaster this year. They went back to an old game. They want to use that name. They want to use that license again to make money. Look at how many times friggin' re-released Skyrim was. Whether it's a remake or remaster, there's a bunch of them. Skyrim is out there. Like, it's available.
And to be fair, they did add something to each release.
Well, the special edition is an HD up.
Yeah.
So fair enough.
Yeah.
But, like, regardless, like...
And it came with all the DLC and stuff.
That's the next one.
Special edition didn't come with that?
Special edition did not come with that. Special edition... Because remember, this thing released on 360.
Yeah. And then special edition was PS4, right?
PS4.
Yeah, and Xbox One.
Yeah, and then there's another one, I'm pretty sure.
That didn't come with a DLC.
The Anniversary Edition came with the DLC. Wait, hang on. What do you mean by DLC? I'm talking Creation Club DLC.
No, I'm talking...
DLC?
Bethesda DLC.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay.
Bethesda DLC was it's like the gaudy
Game Special of the Year. Came with Game of the Year content.
Yes.
Anniversary came with that.
Creation Club.
And the Creation Club stuff.
At that time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now there's Creation Club 2.0, of which is an update to Anniversary Edition, which is a whole new thing. And
okay.
Blah, yada, yada, right?
But so you have a problem, or do you have a problem with bringing old games to modern hardware?
So I'm conflicted because here's the thing. Something like Oblivion, if you remake it or remaster it, I don't care which one it is, I'm going to purchase it. I'm going to play it. done. Like, yeah. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But it's available on modern consoles.
On PC and on Xbox, right?
And on Xbox. You can stream it.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing, though, is Oblivion is on the cusp of being modern. And what I mean by modern is it's not tank controls. You talk to people in conversation trees. You know, you attack a certain way, you block a certain way. It's physics-based.
A kid would be able to play it today and not really complain too much.
And he would say, like, this is old. It has some dust on it. It's a patina.
Looks ugly, but...
But it's not difficult to play.
They can play it, yeah.
But then if you go to Mafia, and then there's Mafia Definitive Edition, the original Mafia is freaking old. Like, kind of runs like garbage.
Is it older than Oblivion?
Yeah, by 4 years, I think.
Okay.
2002. And, like, you know, the city looks bad. Things are flat textured. The controls are really clunky. The game is stupidly difficult. Like, you just get stuck in the stupidest situations, and there's no cover mechanic and crap like that. Like, it would be something that a kid would struggle with. Now, I played the PC version. I know one of the versions, I don't remember which one, is notorious for being really buggy.
Mm.
I thought it was the PS2, but I had some bad experience on the PC as well, so I don't know whether I was playing the bad one. But Definitive Edition comes out, it's a complete redo. For the sake of our conversation today, it's a remaster,
yep.
Is effectively what it is.
Okay.
For the sake of our example. But that brings it to a modern audience. So, contrast it again to Bethesda. Morrowind can be streamed. It's available on technical, like, it's accessible on modern hardware right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, it can be streamed. It's on Game Pass. It's on PC. Like, it can play on a modern PC, etc.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You can play it a lot. Like, you play it on your phone. That game is fucking old. It handles like shit. Looks like shit. The view distance is bad. You know what I mean? It's not physics-based. It's role-based. Like, that game is fucking old. Mm-hmm. It's old. So, that, I would argue, probably should be bumped up before Oblivion. Because Oblivion is modern accessible. And they both are, but one of them is not modern accessible to a modern audience, specifically.
But what warrants the remake?
That's, I think, what we're arguing, maybe.
Because Oblivion is beloved and has a lot of fans.
Right.
I don't think Morrowind is as beloved or has many fans that care about it.
There's a lot, like, people make Morrowind content to this day.
Sure, but no one really talks about it anymore.
That's true.
It's not in the lexicon of gamers anymore.
That's true.
But Oblivion still gets brought up quite frequently.
That's true, very true.
So, when you, from a, like, these are business decisions these companies make. They're not going to bring back the original Elder Scrolls and remake that. Because no one's calling for it.
Sure.
No one's asking for it. So, it doesn't make sense to bring that to market. And all these levels that we gave for re-release, remaster, and remake, it all depends on how much money you want to spend and how much you'll get from selling it. So remaster or re-release is obviously the cheapest option.
Yeah.
And I kind of think, because there's a lot of people who are talking about preservation of games.
Yeah.
So it would be nice if they just re-released it, if they could.
Well, that's that modern accessibility, right?
Yeah.
Where it's like, You can play Morrowind. Like, if you want to go play Morrowind, you want to play Morrowind. But if we were to say which one needs it, I would say the one that needs it is Morrowind. But I would prefer for it to be Oblivion because I like it. You're right.
Yeah.
In that way. Like, marketing-wise, Oblivion makes the most sense.
Yeah. And then a remaster can still cost millions of dollars, right?
Of course. To
get done. And so that's a whole different decision. And then remake is, you might as well just be making a new game.
Right.
Because you are, sure, a lot of the creative stuff might be handled, but that's not the most of the cost. The cost of the developing the game.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So the budgets could be equal to a new game.
So what's the question? What's the Career Corner question again?
Like, are there too many? So this is what I was trying to establish. I think we could agree that, you know, there's nothing really wrong with
a re-release.
With a re-release.
Totally no, I'd say.
Re-release every game you want.
Of course.
There can be arguments over how much it costs. You know,
sure.
If you already purchased it, should you be forced to purchase it again?
Or do you get grandfathered in? That's a per company question.
That's really a different question. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, every old game, I have no problem with it coming to new consoles.
Yeah, bring all the DOS games to PS4. I really don't care.
It seems like remasters are fewer than they used to be. Am I wrong in that?
Well, I don't know, because I guess that's the thing I'm questioning is that, like, I'm not really seeing a lot of new IP. I'm seeing new IP come out, but I'm not seeing new IP really resonate. anymore. And I feel like you were talking about Metal Gear earlier.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like, Metal Gear Solid fans are getting, you know, all riled up or whatever. And it's like, you've done it before, though. Like, you've played this before. Like, sure, I'd get a little excited over Oblivion, but if it was like, hey, we're going to do it, and then they're like, hey, we couldn't afford it, we didn't do it, it'd be like, damn, I guess I'll, if I really want to, I'll go play the other one because it's still modern, accessible.
Mm-hmm. And in the case of Metal Gear, too, because I think you and Adriano might have said that you would prefer, or maybe it's just Adriano, but you would prefer they make a new game rather than remaster or remake some old game. Because Metal Gear Solid 3 is still playable by modern standards.
Yep.
So, and especially when they're not changing the story at all. They're reusing the dialogue. It's like, it's not really a new game.
No.
And so you could see that as a waste of time. But remakes like Resident Evil and Final Fantasy, those are brand new experiences.
Right.
Are those warranted, do you think?
So, in that case, I think that Final Fantasy VII, again, it has that modern accessible problem.
Yeah.
Where, like, it's... I don't know... I can't remember if Final Fantasy VII is available on a mod... Let's just say it is, for the sake of example.
I think it might be, actually, because... PC, for sure.
Okay, so let's say, like, Final Fantasy VII, its original form, is available on a modern PC or console.
It might be on PS4 as well, I think.
So let's say it's available. That's modern accessible, but... With an asterisk, it's like
I wouldn't be able to play it.
Would the kid? Yeah. See, like, would the are the modern accoutrements, or the modern game design methods? I guess are they so far missing? Are there so many of those things missing in the old game?
Yeah.
That it's like it's available, but is it accessible? Kind of.
I would not play it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but I played 7 Remake. Yeah. But that's adding value too, though.
That's
so
true.
If you still love the originals, those are still there for you, but they've added value to that franchise by remaking it in a way that has more story, has more characters,
has
more content. So that's a net positive, I guess.
Like, right? I think the old one, the original one, should be preserved.
Yeah.
To be clear.
Yeah.
And that's why we said we have no problem with them re-releasing stuff. Do it over and over again. I really don't care.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. But like. It is a question of the remakes. Like, is... You know how, like, when... like, a console comes out and, like, a series just released, like, a thing at the end of the old console? So, for example, end of the 360, GTA 5 comes out. Then GTA 5 gets re-released on Xbox One. And then I think it got further re-released on series, for example, on the Xbox family. It's just sort of like... That's a wasted opportunity for Rockstar to make another game on the Xbox series. Or, excuse me. Well, the Xbox Series as well, but particularly on the Xbox One, when you could play GTA 5 on the Xbox One.
Yeah. However, I think my memory's so, this was so long ago, right? So The Last of Us did the same thing. Came out the last year of the PS3, and then they came out with a remastered version for PS4, right? If I remember at the time, Naughty Dog said that what's valuable about doing that, because people think it's a cash grab, right?
I used to bug you and call it the Cash of Us, yeah.
But you said that about the modern version, the modern re-release of the title.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Which again falls into that gray area of remake, because it doesn't look like the original copy anymore.
Right.
They gave it The Last of Us 2 coat of paint, but it's still the same environment, same, everything's in the same place, basically.
Right.
Right. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. But I remember Naughty Dog saying at the time, this helps their developers get used to developing on the next-gen system. So them doing the remaster was basically training, and then got them used to it so they could make Uncharted 4 on PS4. How do you feel about that?
I would like to know the timeline of you training versus being like, this is a training project that also so happens to be a project we're releasing.
They were probably working on the... I don't know. But maybe they were working on The Last of Us PS3...
Right.
At the same time, they would have had dev kits from Sony for the PS4.
Sure, assuredly, yeah.
So they probably were working on the remaster, because I think it just came out like a year into the PS4. Something like
that. It's something pretty soon, yeah.
And Tomb Raider came out real quick.
Yeah.
And that I would argue that's a remaster, not just a re-release.
Oh, it was on the 360, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they actually upped it and remastered it.
Changed the Lara Croft, too, didn't they?
Yeah, her face, yeah. I don't remember what that original one looks like anymore.
I only played that one, so that's all I remember.
I remember you didn't like the new one because you were so used to that first one.
That's right, because I had just played it, though.
Yeah. And same with The Last of Us. It was actually remastered in higher resolution textures for the next-gen console. It wasn't just bringing the PS3 version and re-releasing it on PS4.
Well, it reminds me...
So those are remasters.
Like, well, it is a question, too, because, like, earlier when I said about the GTA thing, where I said GTA on 360 could play on Xbox One, could it?
Wait, say that again?
So could the Xbox 360 version, and it relates to what you said, could the Xbox 360 version
of GTA 5
run on the Xbox One?
I'm going to say yes, because didn't Red Dead also run on Xbox One?
Wasn't that after they added backcompat?
They had to add backwards compatibility.
So the reason why I mention this, and this goes back to your point, is today, and it is, I think, is today a different landscape than back then?
It is. Because you're not going to have re-release of PS4 games on PS5, because PS5 can run PS4 games.
Right.
Yeah.
And there are some, like the Terminator game had a whole re-release, but they gave it to you for free if you own the old one.
Yeah, yeah. Well, even the Mafia. I got Mafia, like the HD version, on Steam for free.
Definitive Edition?
Not the first one, the second one, I think.
Oh, two? Okay.
Because they HD-ified it, right?
And oh, then, yes,
I got it for free. And then same with Bioshock, I think I got on Steam. The Bioshock HD ones I got for free.
Because the PC is a bit wishy-washy. Like honestly, the same game could be SD and HD, depending on your hardware sometimes.
Yeah, and the games can pretty much run as long as they're supported by whatever DirectX or whatever thing you got running on
it. And someone's going to figure out how to get it running most of the time.
That's true, too, yeah. There's some crazy bastard out there. I'm gonna make my final thought on this be... I am okay with remakes. I'm actually in favor of remakes.
But over a new game. Naughty Dog has the opportunity to make a new game. Doesn't matter if it's Last of Us, or it's just new game, or it's like, not out, like, I want to re-experience in any way, remaster or remake, I want to re-experience one of the Last of Us games.
Okay, no. I will always prefer new IP or even sequel over a remake. However, I'm not opposed to remakes.
Okay.
And Capcom's kind of the perfect example. They're remaking all the Resident Evils.
Right.
But they still have new Resident Evil games coming out.
Right.
So like 7 and Village, those came out alongside the remakes. So they had the capacity to do both. And I'm fine with that. And I am in favor of remakes. Because I understand I'm probably unique in this, maybe. Not in the world, but, you know... I haven't really found anyone else who's like this. I can't play old games for some reason. Right? I've talked about this before. I just can't do it. But I can play a remake because it's a brand new game with modern controls and everything. Like you were saying, Oblivion has basically modern day controls.
I would say it does have modern day controls.
I would still struggle to play it just because it's not a new game.
But that's not because, like, if...
It's in my mind. It's not a physical thing.
It's not a physical thing where it like Final Fantasy VII would handle old.
Right.
Or an old Metal Gear would be tank controls.
This is a mental thing, and so maybe this is just my personal bias that I like remakes.
I'm really torn on this because what I'm thinking is like, okay, think about Bethesda. And this is a weird almost edge case. Bethesda's been fucking up. Just gonna say it. Bethesda's been fucking up. We got Starfield, which we've talked about to you know, wit's end. We got 76, which launched in Austate. And it's also, like, you know, good now, but it's still kind of buggy. Or at least last I played it a couple years ago, it was pretty buggy still. But, like, still was... Like, I liked it. Okay.
It launched in West Virginia.
Almost heaven. So the question is, like, what do I want from them next? Well, I'm scared of Starfield. But I know that the source of material of Oblivion or Morrowind would intrigue me. Maybe you guys need to just do a quick... Do a quick one. Well, do a quick little remake or re-release.
Well, no, this is the perfect thing, because they have the next Elder Scrolls game they're working on. Would you rather see that, or them work on an Oblivion remake?
So this is a weird thing. This is a weird personal thing, though. I'm kind of done with fantasy.
Oh, okay. All right.
So I've been into, like, the more realistic stuff lately, for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of, like, done with fantasy a little bit, and, like... I'm fatigued of it.
Yeah.
So I'm doing like RoboCop and stuff where it's like, you know, 80s futurism, but it's like rooted in a potential us in the future, like humans in the future.
Yeah.
As far as I know, we're not going to suddenly become, you know, peasants with wizards and shit like that, right? Like, as far as I'm aware.
Right.
Right. So it's like...
Although Star Wars is a futuristic fantasy.
Right. But I'm not that super into Star Wars either.
Yeah.
So like, I'm just kind of like, dunnish or fatigued of fantasy, but I'm not fatigued of Oblivion because it has some, has nostalgia in there. There's a reason why I didn't play Skyrim all that much in comparison. I beat it, I played it a bunch, but not that much.
Fantasy is tough because it is so restrictive. It's like you have to have certain things for it to be fantasy.
Right.
And that kind of holds it back in a sense. Whereas sci-fi can be so much more. Because like the Dune movies, and I mean the book, yes, but just the movies, they're sci-fi, but they don't look like a normal sci-fi.
No.
They're on this desert planet, they're scrounging for water, you know, they have like modern vehicles and stuff like that, but it's almost a weird combination of fantasy and sci-fi.
But it's like, that universe drives me nuts.
But you know what
I'm
saying?
It's also like, you know, but you're right, it's like a fantasy monarchy that grew up in technology.
Yeah.
It's like the Oblivion folk, technologically advanced to be... So,
sci-fi has the leniency to be that, but also Cyberpunk 2077. And also RoboCop. And also Star Wars. You know? It has a lot more leeway, but fantasy is like, you know, Middle Ages, wizards, castles, elves.
Yeah.
It all has to have that same stuff in there. And so it does become repetitive.
I will say this is like, I think I would be more for Elder Scrolls 6 if Starfield was better.
That's interesting.
So like, again, I do think that them making missteps, it's like, guys, back to basics. Let's kind of retract a little bit. Take a breather.
Yeah.
You know, we don't need to make something new right now.
Yeah.
Get back on our feet. I will say this is like, I would prefer in general to see, as my closing statement, to be more new IP or even the same series and there's another one.
That's what I said. Like a new AC or whatever. Yeah.
So same thing. I'd prefer that in general, because if everything's just remakes and remasters, at some point it's just going to be like, okay.
The problem is they're safer, right?
It is a problem.
And we're entering this time period where like the video game industry is a little rocky. People are afraid to take risks. The budgets are so high that if you take a risk and it fails, it hurts. And so they want these safe options, and that's what remakes are.
I want to know why the hell these, like, I mean, that's a whole other question at this point, but, like, I want to know why the hell these budgets ballooned that much.
I think it's all tech-based.
But the weird thing is some of these games are shallow as hell. Go and defend my dog! Defend my cousin!
The money isn't going into expanding what you do in the game. It's going into the visuals of the game.
That's stupid.
But that's what they think sells.
It's, you know, I shouldn't say it's stupid. It's like, unwise, I think. Like, instead of pushing the whole industry up at once, or, you know, a little lopsidedness, because it'll never be even, it's like they just went, like, they put visuals to 10. It's like limited skill points. It's like they put all the freaking skill points into the graphics, and then they didn't have enough for, like, you know, like, in Fallout, they didn't have enough for, like, agility and endurance, but and...
what taught them, or maybe not taught them, but what misled them to think that visuals were what sold their games? The Last of Us is not beloved because of the way it looks. You know what I mean? Last of Us 2 looks fantastic. One of the best looking games I've ever seen. But it's not like that was the selling point of it.
That's true.
You know?
Old games, though, so like a Far Cry 3, I went back and played Far Cry 3, the HD version, is just a facelift. That game feels freaking empty. Yeah. And a lot of that's like, there's lack of decoration, there's lack of stuff going on, lack of stuff on the screen. Now, some of that's due to the fact that it's the 360 and the computers of the time, sure. But like, the environments, I will admit, have gotten like a bajillion times better, 100%. Mm-hmm. But there has to be a reckoning in this, like stealth systems in games are so goddamn boring. Like, whistle and he'll come over. Oh my fuck, okay.
Well, I was complaining to you about AC and how like, the guards are just like, hey, I need to kill you now. Just because you like put one foot into their area. It's not like, oh, sorry, I didn't mean to misstep. And they're like, oh, get out of here. It's like, no, they instantly go into attack mode.
Yeah.
You know? And it's not like you can even give up. But I think there were some games. Was it Oblivion and Skyrim where you could put your sword away?
You parlay it.
Yeah. That makes more sense. You should be able to give up for something rather than just be killed in the street.
And if you piss them off enough, you can't.
Right. But it's ridiculous that of all these AC games, all their NPCs act the exact same way.
Yep.
They've always acted. You do something wrong, kill you, the answer.
And if you trespass in a Starfield, or not necessarily, I don't know about Starfield, but in Oblivion in that, someone literally comes running up to you and doesn't even... Back then, you used to pause when you talk, right?
Yeah.
Not even do that. They just say in the world, they're like, get out of here, I'm calling the guards. And you stay there too long, it's like, guards? Then that's it. And now you're charged.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
But charging would be better than kill you.
Yes.
Why is the option always kill you?
That's true. It's a good question. It's just easy, probably.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on to what we're playing.
What we're playing?
Yeah, Matt, what are you playing?
I've been playing quite a bit of RoboCop, actually. RoboCop Rogue City. I've been playing it on my PC. Yeah, it looks really nice. I've been doing most, if not all, the side stuff that I find. Did a couple of like secret areas and stuff. Getting pretty close. So how the game works is like basically it's like you're at the police station. Maybe there's some quests at the police station. You eventually kind of roll out. You roll out. Usually there's a free roam area. You can like find side quests, find secrets and all that crap. Each of the places is like pretty uniquely designed. I'm in a repeat one right now, but pretty uniquely designed. Whatever. You can do the main quest. You can do some side stuff. And then once you progress that main quest, it'll tell you like, hey, you're about to leave this area. Do you want to like, you know, do anything else here?
Mm-hmm.
You leave, you kind of conclude that part of the case, back to the police station, rinse, repeat. Pretty good though. Like really enjoying it. It feels like RoboCop. OCP is just evil as ever. And they're just like fucking crazy. Like they're trying to, and there's like some weird, stuff in the game too. Like you can talk to, people and you can decide to, and it doesn't blatantly tell you it's if it's human or robot, but you can decide things in missions. So there was this graffiti artist that I pissed off, and it said that. It was like, you've now made an enemy of the graffiti artist.
Mm-hmm.
So presumably, there's at some point, maybe he comes to my rescue, and he won't. There was a politician that came up to me that said, like, are you just an OCP, which is the company that makes all the stuff, are you an OCP, like, sort of pawn? Is that all you are, RoboCop? You're just one of their products? Like, vote for me. Like, I'm a real mayor, and they're trying to put a puppet in charge of Detroit. And I was just like, I will not let OCP take over or something like that. And then it's like you've made a political impact. And then when I'm walking around the streets, people are like, man, maybe we should talk to that other guy. Like, that OCP guy is kind of a puppet.
Mm, wow.
And shit like that. And it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
There's a really cool... Some people complained about it on reviews. You can find these chips you put in your gun. So, like, the classic RoboCop gun, which is massively overpowered in general. You shoot someone in the head, their head is gone. Like, you would like this, Ryan.
Yeah.
I've had guys, like, with their hands come off and they talk about it. They're like, fucking shot my hand off! And shit like that. Like,
that's good stuff.
One of the upgrades raises the gore. I, like, ran into a room and for the first time I ever had full auto and just hosed a room down and there were bits of people on the floor. Like, it was wild.
Jeez.
But no, like, there's this cool thing where you find these chips. You can repurpose them from, like, you know, ED-209s. Or randomly found in OCP crates. And you put them in the gun. And they have like a branching sort of like almost like a mini game. And you find chips that face certain directions. And you sort of like solve these puzzles. And the chips are worth a certain percentage. So it'll be like, if you find a chip that goes left or right, you don't get any negative. But if it goes left and up, you get a negative, but maybe there's another positive.
Mm.
So you get to sort of like have this schematic and you get to pick and choose which parts you get. So like you work toward, there's like these green areas that are like, you know, more armor penetration, more damage, whatever. But then there's these like big ones that are gold or yellow, which are like more gore. I think it's like a large ammo penetration, a full auto mode, things like that. So you kind of like work toward those and you can combine your chips. So you like find a bunch of chips at like 10 or 13%. You can combine them, and they'll be like, you know, now it's 12, and now it's 15, now it's 13, but now you have less options. So you have to kind of, like, balance that a bit.
Yeah.
And it's like, some people complain, because it's, like, I'm on the training chip, I think, right now. And, like, I'm doing fine. So I think some people are like, hey, like, why is this, like, this doesn't feel necessary.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like it's just for fun. Because if it was necessary, you're not RoboCop. Like
right.
You know what I mean? Like, RoboCop, like, you run into a room, and you just, like, take 14 bullets, and you're just like, bang, 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 and then... That's how the game is.
Yeah.
But you could inch out a little more power if you want. Like, I've picked up bikers while they're driving by, whip them at another biker, you know, crap like that. Like, or pick up their motorcycle, whip it at them. I've picked up, like, a full dumpster, and then they'll like, come riding in and just, boom, and like, it's, or the big old CRT monitor is my favorite.
Oh, geez.
Pick up a big old CRT monitor, and somebody's like, there he is! It's like, whip it at a wall, and it bounces, and just whack right in the head or something. Like, it's hilarious. That game's hilarious.
Jeez.
So that game's a lot of fun. So I'm pretty far in that. I think I'm... I want to say two major chapters left. I'm about to meet the old... slight spoiler. I'm about to meet the old man from OCP. So
okay.
That's where I'm at. But I'm not quite done, because there's like... There's sort of like a, you know, like a classic board that the police are like investigating, and it's sort of like I have the king guy and then one left of his underlings.
Yeah.
And I'm like closing in on his underling. So if it's linear like that, then that's where I'm at. But no, that's cool. So I probably have two more free roaming sessions and two more big missions. This is kind of where I'm at. What else have I been playing? Something else this week. Oh, I beat Crackdown 3.
Oh, yeah.
I rarely booted that up last week. Just downloaded it. I was like, I was curious about it, because I always heard it was kind of eh. But it's a Crackdown game. Like, it's not supposed to be amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So I downloaded that off of Game Pass. Started playing it. Thought it was cool. Just sat down for another two sessions and beat it. Game gets super repetitive, which is really unfortunate. Definitely, like, one of the most generic games I've ever played. It's just sort of like... Take out these outposts, and eventually you'll unlock the big tower where the big boss is up at the top.
Well, I was wondering if, like, that was one of the first games they talked about using the cloud to enhance it somehow. Is, like, was that supposed to fill in some gaps, or...
Well, let me tell you this. It's one of the only Series X games that's ever crashed repeatedly on me.
Well,
so there's geez. That.
What a weird time.
But it gets really chaotic. There's explosions. There's, like, tons of people on the screen. People are trying to, like... You know, it's all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Major problem with it. So, I don't know if you played originally one of the Crackdowns.
I played it like errands or something, and I hated it.
Okay, so you earn orbs. So if you beat somebody up, you get like the red orbs, which is like your strength or your fighting orb. There's a gun skill. If you shoot someone with a gun, you get that explosive. Mm-hmm. There's one for agility, and then there's a driving one. The agility one's supposed to allow you to, you know, get a better jump pack, jump higher, etc. The game is so lateral, but there's so little tools to help you parkour. And like... Yeah, there's a jetpack and stuff, and, like, if I had invested a whole bunch of time in grinding to get, like, a better jetpack and stuff, I would have been able to get around a little easier.
Yeah.
But I was doing a ton of agility orbs when I found them. I only skipped one or two of the towers, and one of them was, like, way too hard for my level, so it's like, okay, like, I can't do this right now. So I skipped effectively one of the agility towers. I went after secret orbs whenever I found them, which give you a boost in everything. You know, I went after the driving stuff, and the driving stuff was fine. It's just, for some reason, like, the parkouring just isn't quite good enough for it to be a game that was, oh, you're six levels below, and there's like eight, it's like a futuristic city, so, like, there's eight, like, elevated highways up, so you have to, like, get up there, oh, a little bit of a weird jump, because it's not the greatest controlling game, oh, fell down, for fuck's sake, okay, find how to get back up. My car, you can call your car in anywhere, and your car you can transform into, I think it's one or two different shapes. I have one unlocked. Where if I make a jump, it'll stick to whatever surface, so I can land on a wall and drive up it. A lot of the towers, they make it so it can't drive up it all the way. So you have to hop out, whatever, but it's still helpful. But the car is like, you call it in and it hits me every time. Like, it'll be like, ah! Like, Terry Crews is screaming because I run over my car. Like, and yeah, I'm running toward my car, but it's like, it's a smart car. Like, stop. Like, don't drift into me. And I just honestly felt like in the first game, remembering that, it was just better cars. Like, it was just like a police car and stuff like this. This is supposed to be like your ultimate car and like all this. And so there was that. And the one last complaint I had about it was the freaking people don't shut up. There's this lady that helps you. It's like the tech lady on the island. And then the agency owner or the agency, I don't know, sergeant or whatever. He does not shut up. You'll be walking by and be like, there's cars in this city, agents. Like, holy crap. Like, okay, thank you. And then she'll be like, hi, well, I think cars are great. It's like, no, you don't need to keep talking to me about cars. Like, I'm trying to do something else.
Yeah.
You know, holy crap. But the game's fun. Like, it's like a lesser Just Cause. It's just chaos, there's explosions, you unlock cool guns, you run around, you blow things up, you punch people, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
So I beat it. Seven-ish. I think I give it a 7 on IGN. Marked it as complete on my playlist. And then last thing I did, which is super freaking random, I booted up Frontlines Fuel of War from the 360.
Oh my god.
I never played it, and there's a campaign, and it's from the makers of Homefront.
Oh, okay.
So I was like, alright. And it's the same game that you play online.
Are they still alive?
No, they're dead.
Okay.
But it's the same game that you play online. You, like, fight for territory, and it's like capture these points and it pushes the front line up, hence front line. And there's all these tools and gadgets and stuff, so you do that through campaign missions. You do like most of the same activities. Obviously it's not just an open battlefield though, but you get like the freedom to tackle objectives in the order you want mostly and things like that. I mean, the controls are horrible, but it's a fun game. It's pretty fun. So I'm probably going to beat it, because it's not that long. Mm-hmm. And that'll be another one off the old backlog.
Jeez.
And that's it. That's been my week. How about you?
I haven't been playing online, because my internet has been dead.
Big time dead.
I have download speeds. I have no upload speeds. And so I can't really play online. But that gave me time to really dig into Assassin's Creed Mirage.
Mm-hmm.
And I am almost done that. I'll probably finish it like either tomorrow or Sunday. And then on to the Platinum, I think.
How do you feel when you get close to an end of a game? Like, even RoboCop, every time I played, I'm enjoying it. Now that I feel like I've experienced the gameplay loop, I'm just sort of like, I don't need to be as thorough anymore.
Opposite, I think.
Really?
Because I know once the credits roll, I won't feel obligated to play it ever again.
Okay.
And so what I do is, like, I will slow down main missions as I get closer to the end. And I'll start doing more side missions. I'll start doing more collectibles. And whatever else I want to do, I'll start doing. Because I know once I end, I won't be able to do that.
Okay.
Yeah. But in the case of platinuming a game where I've decided I want to platinum this, I will continue on after I beat it. Right. Depending on how many are left.
Okay.
How many trophies are left.
And what they are, I assume.
Yeah. I already scanned over them. I didn't look at what the hidden ones are. So maybe those will give me some grief. But Aaron thinks there might be one that's missable. I already have it, but it might be missable. You need to pickpocket an enemy that you have, like, shot with a blow dart to, like, you know, either knock them out or make them go crazy or whatever.
Yep.
And there's only so many enemies you can pickpocket in the game.
Oh.
They have certain collectibles on them that you pickpocket.
You know what might help you? There's, if you look it up, and there's
spoilers. Well, I already have it.
Okay, but like...
But Aaron told me that it might be missable, yeah.
But there are guides that will tell you what's missable. And will tell you, like, this is a spoiler... Or not?
But shouldn't games not have missable trophies?
I think that's pigeonholing them too much. Because
I guess you could boot up another
save
and then just run that trophy
or NG plus.
Yeah, so I don't know. The ones I really hate is like completed on like death difficulty. It's like I can't do that. I can't. You know.
You know what though? I like the games that are super hard at the high difficulty. That you earn your place and it becomes doable. Remnants like that. Where like I can go into Apocalypse Solo and be like, this is a fucking dangerous place, but I'm dangerous too. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So that's about all I've played, I think.
I'm surprised you haven't beat it if it's supposed to be short, right?
Yeah, I think my save is at like 21 hours right now.
Oh, okay, it's longer than I thought.
And probably an hour of main story left, probably.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's longer than I thought. I thought it was like 15 or something.
No, but it goes by quick. And you can kind of tell right off the bat. Because like when you open up like your map of who you need to kill, you can't really scroll around that much. So you kind of get a sense there's not going to be a lot going on.
Right.
And then you see a pattern developing in how they have what you're doing. It expands as you're doing them. And so you see a pattern developing. Like, okay, I just need to fill out like this area. And then it's fight the big bad in the middle.
Right.
And that's it. So, but it's been a nice little like shot of AC after some big old massive AC games. This has been a nice
back to Valhalla for the platinum buddy.
And so far, not a single mention of modern day. Now there might be something in the credits or at the end of the game where they just shoehorn it in. You know what I mean?
I'm not looking forward to it on my Black Flag playthrough.
But they really could abandon it. They can keep their little story between the Templars and the Brotherhood, or what they're known as now, like the Hidden Ones and the Order.
What?
That was established in Origins and in Odyssey. They're not called Templars in Odyssey.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, they're the Order, and then you are a part of the Hidden Ones. That's like the Brotherhood isn't until like Ezio and stuff like that.
Oh, okay. I know what you're saying. You're saying in the history.
Yeah.
I thought you meant like they changed it in the future.
No.
I was gonna say that dumb.
No.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
But I also just like being back in the Middle East, and it just looks right. And maybe it's just because that first game is like so iconic in terms of visuals.
In the same cities too, some of them, right?
I don't know. Where did the first game take place?
Jerusalem, Damascus, and maybe something else.
You're only in Baghdad in this one.
I can't remember if there's a third city or if I'm thinking about the city in which the order lives, like the Assassin's Creed order lives.
But I just even though the first game wasn't that popular and wasn't that good, just the visual of the white robes in the desert is kind of so iconically AC that it looks cool when you're in the game.
That's true.
Back in the Middle East in a white robe, you know, so that's been fun. But that's it. We might be streaming next Wednesday.
If your internet works.
Yeah, twitch.tv/DaemonPatchMedia. Wednesdays, 9 p.m. Eastern.
Tim and I might be farming potatoes without you.
Yeah, that's true.
I have a feeling, for some reason, that game's going to be hilarious.
Maybe, yeah. Other than that, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Peace.